Hello and welcome to the MIT Press Podcast. My name is Chris Gondek, and today I'll be speaking with Dr. Paul H. Patterson, the author of Infectious Behavior, Brain-Immune Connections in Autism, Schizophrenia, and Depression. Paul H. Patterson, a developmental neurobiologist, is Ann P. and Benjamin R. Biagini Professor of Biological Sciences at the California Institute of Technology, and a research professor of neurological surgery at the University of Southern California's Keck School of Medicine. He is the co-author, with Alan Brown, of The Origins of Schizophrenia. Dr. Paul Patterson, thanks so much for being on the MIT Press Podcast today.
My pleasure.
This book is an exploration of the relationship between the immune system and psychiatric conditions. Do we know when medicine first began to suspect that there was a relationship there?
Well, there's history going back to probably the late 1800s, early 1900s. The one that I'm emphasizing in the book is the work of Julius Wagner Jurig, who was working in Vienna in the late 1800s. He actually ended up getting Nobel Prize in 1927 for his work, which has been termed pyrotherapy or fever therapy. He noticed that in his treatment of people who had hallucinations or mania or depression or paranoia, various psychotic conditions, that their symptoms seem to improve when they're sick with an infection. So he had the idea that why not give people in such conditions an infection to give them a fever on purpose. So he treated patients who had something that in those days was termed dementia paralytica. He treated them with malaria, actually infected them with malaria. So they came down with this disease, and he reported that a fair number of them in one small study, 7 out of 10, improved their symptoms during the time that they were infected. But on the other hand, one actually got much worse, and one actually died out of 10 in this study. So it was a really crude experiment. It didn't have a control group that was injected with some non-infected samples. But on the other hand, it was a major event in the history of psychiatry because it helped demonstrate the link between a physical kind of treatment, which nowadays we take for granted, a physical treatment and a mental disorder. It also helped establish this mind-body connection and also the brain-immune connection. It raised the possibility that altering the immune status could affect psychotic symptoms, at least temporarily, and perhaps the becoming sick change the immune balance towards normality. There's a similar type of observation that's been done in the last couple of years in autism. A small study, again, suggesting that when kids with autism become sick and have a fever, that some of their symptoms improve, at least temporarily. So, again, it raises the idea that if one could manipulate the immune system more and more sophisticated way, maybe one could treat symptoms of mental disorders.
As flu season's coming up, you talk about that there's a discussion on the immunological response to the flu virus creates a kind of sickness behavior. Apparently, this can be separated from the other symptoms of the disease. So what I thought was just when I would go through it, just something, oh, well, I'm just sick, that this response, and I'm curious if you can clear it up, is actually somewhat related to depression. Could you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, there are symptoms in common between sickness, the behavior that we exhibit when we're sick, and depression. Certainly everybody recognizes lethargy, as you say, social withdrawal, disturbed sleep patterns, in many cases lack of self-care like grooming. These are seen in both major depression and in sickness behavior. And it's of interest in that context that cytokines are increased in both conditions. Cytokines are small proteins that are produced by immune cells. They mediate communication between immune cells. they're also used in the brain for communication between nerve cells. So cytokines go up when we're sick in the blood, and they go up in major depressive disorder. And animal experiments have shown that the cytokines that are increased during sickness actually can bind to peripheral nerves, nerves out in the body, as in the abdominal cavity and so on, like the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve then transmits some electrical information into the brain, and amazingly, this results in cytokines going up inside the brain. And experiments have shown that this increase in cytokines inside the brain actually modifies behavior, and modifies behavior in such a way that it causes the symptoms of sickness behavior, that is, disturbed sleep and lethargy and so on. So cytokines, at least, are one mechanism that's in common between major depressive disorder and sickness behavior.
Let's talk about the maternal impact, because a large part of the book really talks about the links between immunological diseases of an expectant mother and her offspring. Do we know how strong the links are between those immunological diseases and then the future psychiatric problems of offspring?
Yeah, the modern epidemiology, of course, looks for connections between lifestyle or environmental factors and disease. And in the last 10 years or so, there's been quite good studies done on pregnant women and the outcome, for instance, of schizophrenia in the offspring. And it's been shown that there's, if a woman is sick during pregnancy, sick enough that she actually goes to see the doctor, and this occurs during a particular time during pregnancy, that the risk for schizophrenia in her offspring is increased some 3 to 7-fold. So this is a major increase. It's great. This association is greater than with any candidate gene for schizophrenia that's been found so far. In fact, further studies have been done on blood samples that were archived, that were taken from pregnant women during various times in pregnancy, and researchers have gone back and tested for instance, antibodies against the flu virus in those blood samples, and found that in women whose blood tested positive for antibodies against the flu virus, their offspring have an increased risk for schizophrenia. Also, cytokines. If certain cytokines are elevated in those blood samples, then there's an increased risk for schizophrenia. So the flu connection is pretty dramatic, but more recent studies have also found a connection with bacterial infections in pregnant women, as well as in parasitic infections in pregnant women. So it looks like any kind of infection during gestation can increase the risk for schizophrenia. Also, this has been found last year in a large Danish study in autism. So they looked at something like over 10,000 cases, historical cases of autism, and they looked at the medical records of the mothers of those children and found that the risk for autism was increased if the mother had a severe viral infection during first trimester. So these are just correlations, of course. They don't prove causation, but animal studies support this idea. So in animal studies of mice and rats, for instance, and now in monkeys, that if a pregnant animal is given an infection, such as a flu infection, a respiratory infection, that the offspring can display symptoms of schizophrenia or autism. For instance, the three cardinal symptoms of autism are displayed by those offspring, as well as some symptoms found in schizophrenia. And some of those symptoms can be alleviated by antipsychotic drug treatment in these animals. There's also neuropathology in these offspring that is characteristic of autism and schizophrenia. So the animal studies show that you can do this, you can induce these behaviors and these neuropathologies by simply giving the pregnant animal a respiratory infection, or in fact, you can mimic the respiratory infection effects by simply activating the mother's immune system in the absence of pathogen. So that's sufficient to cause these changes in the offspring.
You mentioned autism in that answer, and there's been a growing suspicion in by some healthcare advocates that childhood vaccination is a contributing factor in the development of autism. Could you talk about that? Are there valid scientific reasons for this belief?
Yeah, well, I think given the immune connections with autism, and there are many, many immune connections, people with autism have changes in their immune system. They have postmortem studies have shown that brains of people with autism have evidence of immune dysregulation, quite severe, actually. And samples taken from autistic patients, living autistic patients, samples of cerebral spinal fluid show evidence of immune dysregulation. So there's a lot of reasons to imagine that vaccination, which of course perturbs the immune system, could have an effect on autism outcome in kids. But so far, all the studies that have been done, all the epidemiological studies that have been done, have failed to find any connection with childhood vaccination and increase risk for autism in those children. So even though autistic symptoms appear during the time period when vaccinations are done, so it looks like there may be a connection, especially to parents who take their kids in for vaccination, then it just fails to find any connection. We have to just accept that evidence. of course, it's always possible that a small fraction of children who are vaccinated, that may tip the balance towards autism. But how small is that fraction? How small is the subset of children? At this point, the people who have done these studies argue that that subset would have to be very small indeed. And if it's so small, then it really doesn't become a risk factor in the end.
So finally, the last chapter of your book talks about both prevention and reversal of mental illness in those who suffer. What would be the strongest preventative actions that could take place?
Well, in terms of maternal infection, there's a lot of common sense preventive steps that people are well aware of, but generally don't take the trouble to do. Washing one's hands very frequently, we all know that that's a good idea, especially after, let's say, going to the grocery store or going to the gas station and so on. That certainly has been shown to lower the probability of infection with things like flu. Cooking meat well before eating it helps to prevent parasites. Similarly, women who are pregnant shouldn't be changing the cat litter because there's evidence that that can increase the probability of infection of parasites such as toxoplasma. Wearing masks when out in public or riding on planes, avoiding sick people, these are all common sense preventative steps that, again, we're well aware of. Intervention during pregnancy, I mean, there's evidence from animal studies that one can block cytokines and prevent the ensuing symptoms in the offspring, although intervening during pregnancy is always a very difficult question and a certainly difficult clinical studies. Intervention during adolescence has been done in animal models. Antipsychotic drugs, for instance, given to animal models can prevent subsequent symptoms that appear in adulthood. The difficulty in in schizophrenia is identifying adolescents who will definitely go on to become psychotic. That really isn't possible at the present time. Also, animal studies have shown in a number of genetic models, such as Rett syndrome, Fragile X, tuberous sclerosis, amazingly intervening genetically in those models or using pharmacological interventions can actually prevent or ameliorate the behavioral symptoms in those animals, even though the wiring in the brain was presumably altered during development in each of those disorders. So intervening in the adult still had a positive effect in those animal models, which is really amazing and really quite encouraging for thinking about, for instance, schizophrenia, where the symptoms, the psychotic symptoms, don't appear until adulthood.
Dr. Paul Patterson, the author of Infectious Behavior, Brain-Immune Connections in Autism, Schizophrenia, and Depression. Thanks for being on the MIT Press podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at mitpress.mit.edu. You can also find us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/MIT Press, or you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at MIT Press. Thanks for listening to this episode of the MIT Press podcast. Copyright 2011, the MIT Press, all rights reserved.